are holding by the Mishnah Yudalot Amud Beis. Finally caught up.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hope we can keep it up. Yeah, let's hope we can keep it up. Okay. Mishnah says, Malkum Shinagu Lumka Behema Dakal Ojikachorim, in places where the minyag is that they sell small animals, that are cows, not cows, sheep and goats, to goyim. Fine, then mochrin, then you're allowed to sell such animals. Malkum Shinagu Shaloi Limka Ein Mochrin, in a place where the minyag is not to sell them, then you're not allowed to sell them.
When Jews don't sell them, they have to
sell them. When Jews, we're talking about Jews who have, that you have in different places. The Gemara is going to, so let's see, the Mishnah is going to continue. Let's learn the Mishnah first, then. Over Chol Mokum Ein Mochrin Lahem Behem Gasa, in all places, you're not allowed to sell them large animals. Large animals, on the face of it, means like cattle and horses and things like that. Discusses later on in the Sugya, is there any possibility that maybe it means only certain kinds of large animals, the kind that are typically used for work? And we'll see in the Gemara what the problem is. But first, agolim usyachin, according to the Tanakhama, you're not allowed to sell them, whether we're talking full, whether we're talking calves, even if we're talking calves or ponies, even baby animals, in other words, because eventually they're going to grow up. Shleiman or shvurin, whether they're whole, whether they're intact, or whether they've got broken legs or whatever.
Because of Avodah Zarah.
No, not Avodah Zarah per se. Hold on. This is I should have mentioned, really, when we started with the Masechta and we started talking about the dinim that apply to goyim, there's actually a bunch of different categories of things that apply. You have some of them that are because of Avodah Zarah, which are the Mishnayos we've been talking about until now. You have ones which are because of the goyim are immoral, which is part of what we're going to be dealing with in our Gemara over here, as well as in the beginning of the next Perek. Yeah. And then you have issues that just in general about Jews versus goyim. For example, later on, when we learn later on in the Masechta, in the next parak, for example, when we talk about Bishalakum and Pasakum and all those sorts of things, it doesn't matter whether the guy's an Oved Avodah Zarah or not. He's a goy, we're a Jew, and therefore there has to be a certain separation. Here,
Bishalakum is what, Dirabanan?
Bishalakum is Dirabanan, but that's the point. No? So you have certain dinim, Daraisa or Dirabanan, that apply only to Oved Avodah Zarah. Some that apply to goyim, whether they're Oved Avodah Zarah or not, if they're immoral, as we will see in our Gemara. And some of them doesn't matter if they're monotheistic, doesn't matter if they're the most moral people, but still a yid is a yid and a goy is a goy.
And therefore
you have certain dinim that apply to goyim regardless. We'll see as we're again. Bishalakum, Pasakum are two examples of it. But in our Mishnah we're gonna see in the Gemara. Right. Well, so we'll see. But in our Mishnah, what the reasons for the dinim in our Mishnah we're going to discuss in the Gemara. But let's first finish the Mishnah, and then we'll talk about it briefly. Okay. So the Tanakhama has said so far we had said like this: you have places you're not allowed to sell them behemagas, the large animals. In some places, additionally, they had the minhag not to sell them small animals such as sheep and goats, and in such places you have to follow that minhag. That we said. So the Tanakhama said you're not allowed to sell them whether it's old or young animals, whether they're whole or whether they're broken. Rabbi Yehuda Mati B'Shurah, Rabbi Yehuda says you're allowed to sell them a broken animal because then they can't use it for work. Well, Ben Beseda, Mati B'Shurah, and they can't use it for work. And Ben Beseda, Mati B'Shurah, Ben Beseda said, which we actually learned earlier in our parak, that Ben Beseda allows you to sell them a horse. So let's before we get into the Gemara, let's deal briefly with what Rashi explained over here. And then we have a couple of different explanations. So first of all, okay, why aren't you allowed to sell them large animals? So we'll see in the Gemara what the various issues are, but the end thing is going to be, the Makigana is going to be, because they end up doing work with them on Shabbos. And in what way is that a problem? We'll see in the Gemara. What's the problem of selling them an animal if they're going to do work with it? Fine, that's the point. So we'll see in the Gemara what the exact issue is, but the point is that large animals can be used for work on Shabbos, and therefore you have a problem.
I don't care about them.
No, actually, we'll see in the Gemara that not. That's the whole point. We'll see in the Gemara. Wait, relax. But anyway, so that's the problem with large animals then, and that's why Tosfos discusses later on that maybe it applies only to certain kinds of large animals, because you have some kinds that they use for work, you have other kinds that they might conceivably be buying for in order to eat. We'll see, we'll discuss later in the Gemara. We'll get into that. Anyway. So we said in some places they have the minhag to also not sell small animals. So you have a couple of different reasons. You have a couple of different reasons that Mefarshim give. Rashi just mentions over here briefly. We're talking in a place where are you allowed to sell the small animals in places where we don't suspect the goyim of bestiality, because as we'll see in the Gemara, that's another one of the issues in selling animals to them. So you have the ramp. So the Gemara is going to establish later on that they don't do such things with their own animals because it weakens them. It makes them infertile, whatever it is. So the Ran and the Ritva talk about different ideas, that the different variations on the idea that maybe in the places where they had the minhag not to sell them small animals, maybe they were still concerned there might be some goyim who do that after all, or they weren't sure, or they figured if a Jew is allowed to sell them such animals, they may come to also leave their own animals for safekeeping by a goy, and that, as we'll see in the Gemara, is also because there the goy has no reason to worry about his health. It's not his animal. Rashi in Pesachim, where this Mishnah is also brought in Pesachim, gives a different reason that in these places they made a minhag for themselves. They're not going to sell small animals because that may lead them to sell large animals, which our Mishnah said is offered. Okay.
Small animals, yes.
Unless it's a place where the minhag is not, right. Okay. So then we said that you're not allowed to sell them small ones because eventually they'll grow up to be big ones, and you're not allowed to sell them broken ones, Rashi says, because still, it's very easily confused. The Chachamim still included that in the Gzera because if you're allowed to sell them one with broken legs, you may end up selling them one that doesn't have broken legs, which they can use for work. And we'll see in the Gemara again what the problem with work is. So we'll see in the Gemara again why Rabbi Yehuda is okay with selling them a broken one. And Ben Beseira says you're allowed to sell them a horse. The reason is because Rashi explained a horse, the main thing you use it for is riding. Riding on a horse is not technically a malacha. Because we have a concept in Hilchos Shabbos, Chai Noisei Atzmai, a living creature can carry itself. So even if a Jew were to ride on a horse on Shabbos, it's not a malacha d'araisa, it's only an iser d'rabbanan. Therefore, if the guy is buying a horse and he ends up riding with it on Shabbos, we're not too concerned about that. Because anyway, it's no more than a shavuos. It's no more than an iser d'rabbanan. What's the difference? Either way, the point is that people ride on it.
It's not considered carrying?
No, because the saddle is bottle to it. But Tosfos discusses that actually the Gemara in Shabbos gives a different picture of it that we're actually talking about. The Gemara explains over there that we're actually talking about a horse that's usually used for carrying like trapped birds or whatever. So that's a different issue. But whatever, it's basically that idea that no malacha d'araisa is being done with it. Okay. So now on to the Gemara. The Gemara asks, "Lemember di sura leka minhogu de'ika? Are you telling me that there's no actual iser in selling small animals, sheep and goats, to goyim? And minhogu de'ika, all there is a minhag, in some places they don't sell them, which would mean heicha de nohig iser nohug. So in a place where there's nohig such an iser, then fine, the minhag is a valid minhag, and you can't go against it because you're not supposed to go against the local minhag. But the implication is, in a place where the minhag is that you're allowed to sell them small ones, then you sheep and goats, then you would be allowed to sell them. The problem with that is, we're a mini. I have a contradiction. We learn at the beginning of the next parak, ein ma'amidin behema puntakoyis shal ovedik hachavim. We're not allowed to put an animal of ours to stand in an inn belonging to goyim, like leave it there in the stall in the inn or whatever. Because goyim are suspect of bestiality. So what would be the difference? So by the same logic, then you shouldn't be allowed to sell them a small animal as well, because again, you have the same problem. Lefever, basically, yeah, that you're making it possible for them to do an aveira. So why is our Mishnah saying that selling them a small animal is only dependent on minhag, when on the face of it it's also al pi halacha? Amar Rav, so Rav says the answer is makom shehitiru limker hitiru liyachid, makom sheosru liyachid osru limker. You're right, these two things are actually interdependent. When our Mishnah says, so our Mishnah is saying that it's a matter of minhag, whether you're allowed to sell it or not. The Mishnah at the beginning of the next parak says a blanket statement, you're not allowed to put an animal in a punduk in an inn belonging to goyim. That second Mishnah is dependent on this first one. In a place where you're allowed to sell, in the places where the local minhag was to sell the hamadaka, because they're not worried, the local goyim over there are not suspect of revia, are not suspect of bestiality, mutalimkar, then you're allowed, mutalimkar, then you are allowed to place the animal there in yichud with them, and you're not worried about that. Makom she'osru liyachad osru limker. The places where, as the next parak says, that you're not allowed to leave the animal alone with the goyim. In those places, you're right. Those would be the places where the minhag is that you're not allowed to sell them.
Why do they keep the both?
So there are two separate dinim. One is about selling. One is about placing it in their punduk. But our Mishnah spells out
the same thing.
So our Mishnah is spelling out that there are places where it is mutter, implying, and therefore now when we learn the next parak and we say ein ma'min behema pundukar is shogoyim, then we're meant to understand that that means it's subject to the same rules as you. If it's a place where choshed ala ravia, and therefore we're not allowed to sell it to them, then those are the places you're not allowed to put it in their punduk either. But
we
where
have
yes,
to have the case from Dallas
just because we need to know. Once we need, there's two different things. You can't sell it to them, and you also can't leave it with them temporarily. Yeah.
They're going to suffer not doing business with them just because they might do something to these animals. Why should they suffer? Why should you just suffer just because what they might do?
If you still have an issue of lifting neighbor. So, if that means that you have to restrict your business, same as the previous parak, what are you telling me? You just to suffer and not do business with Goyim 3 days before his chag? Okay, but those are the rules. You got to follow the rules.
Lichneiver,
yeah. Tosfos, by the way, points out that on the face of it, before when we talk about Lichneiver in connection with the Goyim using animals as their korbanos, we distinguished between whether they actually have another animal that they could conceivably use for a korban or not. Here we're not making any such distinction whether he already has an animal that he could be doing revia with. Tosfos says the difference is that when it comes to a korban, he doesn't much care which one he uses. As long as it's a good quality animal, fine, he'll use it for a korban. Here he might particularly have he doesn't have a taiva for this particular animal, but he has a taiva for that one. So therefore we still have reason to be
concerned.
What
is exactly the
We said lifneiver, that you're not allowed to make it, you're not allowed to give the opportunity to another person to do an avera. We talked earlier on Dafavav about the classic example of lifneiver is tre evre nara, when so to speak you and he are on opposite sides of the river. The only way he can get the thing that is also is by you giving it to him. That would be real lifneiver. If not, if you're on the same side of the river, in other words, he could get it himself, then it's only mesayeya. Then it's a lesser thing of mesayeya, which we talked about over there, whether mesayeya applies to goyim or not. But yeah, lifneiver applies to goyim as well. Okay. Fine. So that's Rav's answer, that the two mishnayos are actually interdependent. Rav Elazar says a different answer. No. Afa makom she'osru liyachad mutar limkor. No. The next Mishnah, when it says ein ma'amidin, is a blanket statement. You're never allowed to be miyachet an animal with goyim in a place where there was a problem of rabia. But even in such places, you are allowed to sell them behema daka unless the minhag is otherwise. And the minhag of not selling them is not dependent on that. My timer, what's the reason? What?
You're always allowed.
So you're always, so according to Rabbi Eliezer, you would always be allowed to sell them unless the local minhag is not to. Unless the local minhag is not to, then you have to follow the minhag. My time, because a guy is going to be careful about his own animal. He wants to save his own animal because he doesn't want it to become infertile. Him being reveya, him committing bestiality with it, is going to cause it health problems, is going to cause it to be less fertile or whatever. Therefore, he's not going to do it. So when it comes to a yid's animal, which is only in his inn for a short time, fine, he doesn't care. He has no problem doing that because it's somebody else's animal. It's not his own. But here, where it's his own animal, he himself bought it with good money, he doesn't want to weaken it. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar argues that unless the minhag is otherwise, then you are allowed to sell it to them. So again, the Ran and the Ritva talk about that in places where they didn't sell it to them. Again, it's either that they were still concerned that nevertheless the goy might, or that they figured if you're allowed to sell it to them, then you may end up also keeping it. You may also end up stabling it with them in their punduk, and that we're saying is also. So for those reasons, in those places, they had that minhag. Or Rashi explains in Pesachim over there that they made it as a gzeira, don't do it with small animals, so you don't come to do it with big animals. Whatever, the point is that it's a matter of minhag, but Rav Elazar says it has nothing to do with the question of putting them in a punduk. In a punduk, it's osur, unless, as long as it's a place where the goyim are choshered on Rabia. Selling them is a matter of minhag, depending. It's not related to the next mishnah. By the way, Rishonim say, I mean, practically speaking, nowadays, in most countries, not nowadays, in their times already, bestiality wasn't something accepted among the goyim, at least not officially. Adirabba, there were severe penalties for it. There still are in most countries. Therefore, not necessarily do the dinim of not putting an animal in a goy's punduk apply anymore. Again, this is, I was saying before, that you have three different classes among these dinim in our Masechta, ones that apply to Ovdei Avodah Zarah, ones that apply to immoral goyim, and ones that apply to goyim across the board. This din over here, at least as far as the problems with Revia, is in the second category. The Ask Rav Hodebe continues the Gemara. Actually, Rav ended up changing his mind also and rejecting what he said before, that the question of putting them in a pundak is dependent on minag, depending how the local goyim are. And we know that the Omer of Tachlifa, Omer of Shila Baravim Mishmeder Rav, because we find that the statement in the name of Rav, exactly that a goy is solicitous about his own animal, that it shouldn't become infertile, and therefore he won't be reveyet. So therefore, again, that gives us the same distinction as Rabbi Lazar made between selling it to the goy, where now it's his animal, versus stabling it by him temporarily, where it's not his animal, and therefore he may go ahead and eat. Tosfos discusses, by the way, I mean, we're gonna go through the sugya over here and discuss all the ins and outs of these dinim about selling them animals. In particular, you know, the Mishnah said, and then we're gonna discuss it later, that you can't sell them large animals. Tosfos discusses later on the fact of the matter is people do that nowadays. Well, I don't know, nowadays people don't deal as much in animals as in the old days, but in Tosfos' times, for example, was a common thing. You do sell animals to goyim. How do you do it? Even large animals. How do you deal with that? So again, first of all, Tosfos discusses: are we talking generically about all kinds of large animals? Are we talking maybe only about certain kinds? For example, maybe we have to deal with later in the Gemara whether the halacha is like Ben Beseder or not. So if so, then a horse is mutter. But aside from that, among cattle, for example, is it Tosfos starts by bringing from Rashbam that cows, female animals, are not usually used for work. Therefore, you'd be able to sell them because the pastures it's more likely. Well, it's that, or they buy them in order to shech them and eat them, whatever. Not necessarily in order to work with them. Oxen, male ones, they usually use for work. Rabbi Natan asks on that, as we find in many places in Shasta, just the opposite. They did tend to use female animals for work because they're more docile. So Tosfos makes a different distinction between whether we're talking edible animals or inedible animals, and Tosfos actually says behemoth tahora or behemoth tmeya. I mean, goyim aren't restricted to eating behemoth tahoras, but the point is, apparently Tosfos is making a distinction between animals that they're likely to eat, for example, cattle, versus animals that they're not very likely to eat, for example, I don't know, donkeys, let's say, or camels or what have you. Yeah. Anyway. So in that case, then already that gives you a certain amount of leeway as far as those animals. Then Tosfos talks about further. Tosfos and other Rishonim talk about other considerations among others. Let's go through the Gemara, and actually, as we go through the Gemara, we'll see other things that the Gemara says that give us rationales to be able to be master to sell animals to goyim nowadays. Okay. We said of a chol makom ein merchin behemah gasa. We said in the Mishnah, everywhere you're not allowed to sell them large animals. The my time, so what's the reason? Nihid l'ruvia l'chashinan. Given we just established that we're not worried about ruvia, because once the guy buys the animal, he's not going to do ruvia with it, because he doesn't want to weaken it. Mevid be'malacha chashinan. The problem is, though, we are concerned that he's going to do malacha with it on Shabbos. Okay, so the question is, yeah, Vinny Evans, so let him do malacha with it. Once it's his animal, once he buys it, it's his animal, he can do with it what he wants. As we know, by the way, the famous story about the cow that kept Shabbos, where the yid goes and whispers into the cow's ear, you know, you belong to this guy now. Now you can work on Shabbos.
What did she say?
So the cow didn't say anything, cows don't talk, but you know the story that a guy buys a cow from a yid and he can't get it to work on Shabbos. He goes back to the yid to complain. The yid goes over and whispers down to the cow's ear, and the cow gets up ready to work. So the guy afterwards thinks to himself, you know, I should make a kavachomer to myself. He says, a dumb animal, a cow, knows to observe Shabbos. I'm a human being. I shouldn't know. So the upshot is he eventually became a ger. He's called Rabbi Yochanan ben Tirsa, where Tirsa means a female cow, because he's literally he's like the son of the cow, because he learned from the cow what it means to keep Shabbos and to be a yid. Okay.
What do you say, Chayshinan, that they've been working Shabbos suddenly?
Okay, once we mention the word chashin in the first part of the sentence, then we mention it also over here. You're right. It's almost inevitable he's going to work with that on Shabbos, but it doesn't matter. The leaven on the face of it. Well, again, once it's his animal, it shouldn't be a chash. The neved, why can't he do work with it? The answer is kiven to part of the question. Kiven to zabna kanya. Once he bought it, that's it. He was koine it, and now it's fully his animal. There's no issue of lifnei iver because a goy doesn't have a mitzvah to rest on Shabbos. When it comes to revia, fine. One of the shevim mitzvahs from Noach is that there is that bestiality is also to them, but working on Shabbos is mostly to them. Yeah. Rashi mentions, by the way, an interesting side point over here, which is by that logic, why is it you're not allowed to tell a goy to do malacha for you on Shabbos? By that logic, if a goy is not doesn't have a mitzvah. So Rashi says the reason is because you have a pasuk that says mitzvah to chav adaber dover. We say it in Shabbos morning kiddush that you're not allowed to speak on Shabbos about malacha. So if you tell a goy to do malacha for you, then you're over on that. But if the goy does malacha on his own, that's fine.
Otherwise, you would.
Otherwise, in principle, well, the truth is, before we should talk about, there's actually a different issue. There's a general issue called amir le goy. There's a general issue in other areas of halacha, not just Shabbos, that you're not allowed to tell a goy to do a malacha for you. Okay, but here the chiddush is that even you can't tell him before Shabbos to do the malacha for you on Shabbos. Yeah, anyway. Anyway, so the answer is, the Gemara says, Zero mishum she'elo mishum shechiro. It's fine, but selling it in and of itself wouldn't be a problem. The selling it itself wouldn't be a problem. The problem is, though, you might lend him the animal, or you might rent him the animal, and then he's doing malacha with it on Shabbos, and it's your animal. Then you're over on loy sasako malacha, after ovin chovitecha, abdechav amatko vamtecha, that your animals have to rest on Shabbos. Okay, so the question is why? She'ela kanya v'agra kanya. She'ela kanya v'agra kanya. So what? When he borrowed it, it's considered that he acquired it on the face of it, given that he's chayav in anything that happens to it, even onus. And if he rents it, same thing. It's considered as if he bought it. It's a temporary sale, but it's still a sale. That's what we're assuming for purposes of the question, that when you sell or that when you lend or rent something to somebody else, temporarily it's his. So in that case, it's his. Then what's the problem? Yes, but we have a different problem. The problem is that he may be trying it out. Picture you have a case where the goy buys the animal right before sunset on Friday. He's in the process of buying the animal.
What does that mean?
Hold on. So let's say he already paid the money, but wait. So he already paid the money, but now he wants to try it out to make sure that it actually goes properly, that he can put burdens on it and whatever, they can put packages on it, and it'll go. So he tells Omale Ton Nasi in Yale. So he tells him, go ahead and try it out. V'shamalei l'kole. Now the animal hears the original owner's voice. Remember, even though he just sold it, it's still familiar with his voice up until this time, because all this time he's been the one who handled it.
Only goes by voice. He doesn't see the guy.
No, well, that's not the point. Even if the owner is standing behind it, but v'ozla machamse. Therefore, the animal starts going when he tells it to go. And he wants it to go because he wants the sale to go through. He wants the goy to be satisfied with his purchase. The problem is now you're causing an animal to carry a burden on Shabbos. Mechamer literally means like driving a donkey, but that's what it means. In other words, you're causing an animal to carry a load on Shabbos. And such a thing is also on Shabbos, and you have an opinion that says it's actually a machloikus in Masechta Shabbos. You have an opinion that says that such a thing is a full-fledged malacha, and a person would be chayiv chatas to it if he did it for shogig. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is it's only also, but not chayiv chatas. But our Gemara is taking according to the understanding that it is. So the point is like this. So now you already sold it. Or the sale is maybe the sale is not 100% gone through, but it's almost gone through. So therefore, you can't. So Tosfos discusses that if it was just a matter of that your animal has to rest on Shabbos, that wouldn't be enough reason to ask for selling it. Then you would say that you can't rent it to him or lend it to him or whatever. We wouldn't be worried about selling it to him because of the possibility that you might do it right before Shabbos. But nisyoni, which is a short-term thing, then you have nisyoni means trying it out
with a load.
They're testing it out. So therefore, what it is like this: why are we asking him to sell it? Where the only problem is nisyoni, this short-term thing, this couple of minutes thing, because you have the issue of mechamer, which is much more serious than the issue of shvitzas behemta. Shvitzas behemta is one thing. It's you do have a mitzvah tasei that your animal should rest on Shabbos. But mechamer, which is especially according to the opinion the Gemara is bringing over here, that's actually considered a lav, is that it's actually considered a chiyuv chatas, not malchus really, because Shabbos is a malchus involved, it's either a chatas or skila, but whatever, the point is, that's considered a much more serious thing. So that's why the Gemara is bringing up that point.
Why don't we just prevent the guy from making an Nisayan Erev Shabbos?
Because such a gzera wouldn't last. You're going to make a Nisayan, and people are going to try to cut it closer and closer to Shabbos. By the way, the Yerushalmi brings up a different point about Nisayan, which is sometimes you can also have that the guy, let's say, takes the animal to try for a couple of days, sort of like, you know, nowadays you might let's say, you know, you might buy something and, you know, you have a seven day return period or whatever. Meanwhile, so he hasn't actually bought it yet. He ends up using it on Shabbos. Then you really do have the issue of that your animal is doing work on Shabbos. Never mind Mechamer that we're dealing with in our Gemara over here, that you're telling it to go and it goes. You just have the issue. It still is actually your animal because it hasn't been sold yet. So therefore, because of that, they said that selling it is also. Okay. So now Rav Shisha Breder of Idi asks on our premise, which we ask that on the face of it, what's the problem? We started by saying that you can't sell it because then you may come to rent or lend it to the guy. And we said, so what's the problem with that? Wouldn't a rental or a loan be considered a temporary sale? So now Rav Shisha Breder of Idi is going to question that premise. Uschirus mikanya? Are you telling me that rental is considered a temporary sale, which therefore you're arguing that, which is what we were arguing. We were arguing that therefore there should be, on the face of it, there should be no problem renting it to the guy, which therefore would lead us to say that it can't be, you can't sell it to him because you might come to rent it to him, because renting it to him is mutter. If he does work with it on Shabbos, doesn't matter. But we see from later in our perek, Vatsnan, we learn later on in our perek, even in places where you're allowed to rent goy, where you're allowed to rent houses or buildings to goyim. Later on in the parak, we're going to deal with that. There's halachas over there that you're not allowed to rent to them in Eretz Yisrael, but in Chutzlaretz you're allowed to rent to them. And the Mishnah continues, even in places where you're allowed to rent to them, loyla based zuda omru, we're not talking about renting it to him in order to lend him. Renting it to him in order for him to live there. You can rent it to him, for example, as a storehouse or a warehouse or whatever. But you can't, even in chutzlaretz, you're not allowed to rent it to him as a place to live. Because he ends up bringing his idols in there. Now, if you're going to tell me that rental is considered a temporary sale, what's the problem? So when the guy brings the avodah zara into the house, it's his own house. What's the problem? If you say that a
schir, I don't want the
behemoth. No. You were not talking about behemoth. You were talking about renting houses.
Renting a house.
If you rent, the problem is the Mishnah is saying over there, if you rent a house to a guy, he's going to bring in his geshkes into it.
It's his own geshkes,
but you're not allowed to have them in your house. Now, if you say that a rental is not considered a sale, the animal, or in this case, the house, is considered still belonging to you, okay, then that explains it. Then therefore, you're not allowed to have that he's going to bring avodah zara into your house. No, that's the point, in other words. So we were arguing before that you should be allowed to sell because, so what? If you're going to say that once you're allowed to sell, you may also come to rent or lend the animal, and you're arguing, so what? Once he rents it or once he borrows it, it's considered temporarily his own animal, but we see from our Mishnah that it's not considered that case with a house. So in that case, it should be the same thing by an animal. So in that case, we could assume, therefore, that the actual reason why you're not allowed to sell them large animals is indeed because you might rent it to them or you might lend it to them, and they'll do malacha with it on Shabbos, and it's considered your animal still.
So there are conflicting opinions about whether...
Not conflicting opinions, but that's what Gemara is asking. The Gemara is going back and forth over here on the question. We started by saying that a rental is like a temporary sale, right? Now we see from that later Mishnah on the face of it, it's not. So therefore, we have a contradiction, yeah? or not really a contradiction, but it means, in other words,
it's our opinion.
No, it's a Stam Mishnah. You don't have any other opinions to that effect. It doesn't matter. Houses, animals, it's the same thing. Rental is a rental. But therefore, in other words, so we should still stick with our original premise, which is you're not allowed to sell it to them because you may come to rent it to them. That should be correct, after all. Okay. The answer is no, not necessarily can you prove it anything from that Mishnah, because Shiny Abad is Bechavim, the Chamir. It's different when it comes to Abad Azara, which is very stringent. As the Pasuk says, you should not bring the disgusting thing into your house. So fine, even let's consider that you rented it to him. It's now not considered your house anymore. But nevertheless, you shouldn't make it possible for Abad Azara to be brought into a place that you rented to him. So fine, in that case, we're being extra stringent because it involves Abad Azara. If it was just a matter, in other words, that you're renting him.
Just for the opinion that says that renting is not.
It's not an opinion. We have two different approaches.
Okay.
Two different approaches, right. That's the point. But even if we're going to say, according to the approach, that a rental is considered a sale, nevertheless, though, when it comes to Abad Azara, we want to be extra stringent. We still want to say that you're not allowed to rent in a case where it's going to lead to that Abad Azara can be brought into the place.
Even if it's considered a sale.
Right. And therefore, we could argue, therefore, it is considered a sale. When it comes to Shabbos, therefore, there wouldn't be an issue, because fine, he rented it, therefore it's
still,
his. But when it comes to a house and an Abad Azara, that's different. Okay. However, then Rav Yitzchak Breider of Mesharshia asks another contradiction on our premise that a rental is like a sale. Uschiros Mikanya, again, are you telling me that a rental is considered that he bought it temporarily? But we learn in a Mishnah in Shumas, Yisrael Shesachar Parah Mikoyen, if a Yisrael rents a cow to do work and he rents it from a Koyen, Yachilena Kaushine Truma, he is allowed to give it Kaushinim, which is a type of bean that was usually used for animal food. He's allowed to give it Kaushinim of Truma to eat while it's working for him. Because even though he's a Yisrael and he's not allowed to eat Truma himself, never, the animal belongs to the Kohen. So Rashi explains two different things. Number one, Truma in general, there's no specific Kohen that you could point to that could point to this Truma and say, this Truma is mine. It belongs to some Kohen out there. The Yisrael, after all, can give it to whatever Kohen he wants. Therefore, he could have conceivably given it to this Kohen, and this Kohen would appreciate him, that with this Kohen could then turn around and feed these Kashinim to the animal. So therefore, so the Yisrael is allowed to do that, to begin with. In fact, Rashi says you can even give it more kashinim than an animal would usually be expected to eat. That's fine. It's the Koyan's animal. He wouldn't mind if it's fed extra, so that it's extra healthy. So the Koyan wouldn't mind. Therefore, the Yisrael is allowed to do it. Or Rashi says another possibility. We could also be talking about, let's say, the Truma belongs to the Yisrael in the first place. Namely, you can have a case. How can Truma belong to a Yisrael? So Rashi gives an example. Let's say that Yisrael's mother's father was a Koyan.
Right.
He died, leaving over Truma that was still in his possession, that had been given to him, and now it's Truma in the hands of a Kohen. He died. He left it via Rusha to his grandson. Mm-hmm. So now, fine, the Yisrael is not allowed to eat it. Under normal circumstances, he would go and sell it to a Kohen. Like this, he has control. He has financial control over it, therefore he can feed it to the animal.
Yisrael is allowed to possess Truma.
Right.
He's not allowed to use it, he's allowed to possess it.
He's allowed to possess it, and in certain cases, like the cases we had over here, he might even be allowed to sell it. Right. Yeah. Tosfos gives yet another, Tosfos and a bunch of other Mephoshim give yet another example that we're talking about over here, another thing that they say we're talking about over here, that to begin with, when the Yisrael rented the cow, he agreed with the Kohen that I'm not going to be responsible for feeding it, you are. Well, therefore, it's Truma, it belongs to the Kohen, so therefore it's allowed. Okay. The Koyan Shasacha Parah Mitzrah, on the other hand, continues the Mishnah, if a Koyan rents a cow from a Yid to do work, from Yisrael, Afafishim is an Yisrael Olav, even if the deal was that the Koyan is going to feed the animal, Lo Yachilana Kashin et Truma, he's still not allowed to feed it beans of Truma because it's not his animal. A Koyan is allowed to feed Truma to an animal that belongs to him. This doesn't belong to him. So now comes the question.
Why can't you kill an animal that doesn't belong to you?
Because that's not part of what a Kohen is allowed to do with Truma. If Kohen is allowed to, with Truma, he and his family are allowed to eat it. if it's Truma Tahora, he's allowed to also feed it to his avodim and to his animals.
But
not just something that doesn't belong to him, right? Right. What? Can you pass away, right? That's just something that belongs to him.
He rents a cow to Israel.
That's what we're saying. So if he rented a cow to Israel, again, so we have three different explanations why it is that the Israel is allowed to feed it with Truma. One is because the Israel effectively is giving this Truma to the Kohen, who's then turning around and feeding the animal. Or not, it's not literally going through the Kohen's hands, but that's the effect of it.
Okay.
Two is because, talking about with the case where the Truma financially belongs to the Israel, he inherited it from his grandfather. And three, Tosfos talks about that we're talking about the deal was, look, that the Kohen was responsible for feeding it all along. So therefore, it's still the Kohen to feed. On the other hand, if the Kohen rents the animal from the Israel, doesn't matter what the deal was, who's feeding it or not. The point is, the cow does not belong to the Kohen. Therefore, he can't feed it with the Truma.
So wait a minute. You just said that renting is like...
That's what we're asking. The Isak, that Schiros Kanya, if you're going to tell me that Schiros is considered a temporary sale, Amaya Lo Yachilena, why should the Kohen not be allowed to feed it with Truma? Part of the day, he isn't in his own cow. Obviously, that demonstrates El Shmamina Schiros Lo Kanya. Obviously, that shows that Schiros is not considered a sale. So therefore, that means, in other words, that now we don't have to answer with the previous case about renting the house to the goy, that we're talking about Avodah Zarah is extra stringent. It's a matter of basic halacha, because it's still considered your house, and you can't have him bring Avodah Zarah into your house. Applying that to the original thing that we started the sugya with, it would mean that we're back to our original assumption. You can't sell the animal to the goy, because you may rent it to him or lend it to him, and he'll do work with it on Shabbos, and it is considered your animal. So now that we've established that, in fact, schirus does not constitute a sale, then we're back to what we said originally. Then we have three reasons why you're not allowed to sell a large animal to a goy that can be used for malacha. One, because that may lead you to rent it to him. Another, because you may lead you to lend it to him. And three, because you may rent it to him, which we just established a rental is still considered belongs to you. Two, the same thing with lending. And three, because we have the business of Nisyoni that we talked about before, where you may actually be selling it to him, but you sell it to him right before Shabbos, and he's trying it out, and you're doing Mechamer. And therefore,
renting, lending, and
Nisyoni, right. Tosfos points out there are actually areas in Halacha, in particular when it comes to the Dinim of Einah, where we consider Schirus to be like a sale. But there, Tosfos says, you have an extra word, Mimkar, which means a sale on the Pasuk. So therefore, we understand any kind of sale, whether temporary or permanent. But other than that, we shouldn't assume that a rental or a loan is considered any kind of sale. So it's not, and therefore it still belongs to you, and therefore you can't sell the large animal to the goy because he can do malacha with it, because he's going to end up doing malacha with it on Shabbos. Rav Ada Shorlo Zabuni Chamra Ayoda de Safsira. Rav Ada was matir to sell a donkey to a goy through a middleman. Ayoda through the hand of a safser, which is actually translates to safser as a sarser, which means a middleman. So you have a yid Reuven sells the donkey to a middleman, Shimon, or gives it to, not necessarily sells it to him, whatever, gives it to him to sell on commission or whatever. Shimon turns around and sells it to Tony, the goy. And Rav Ada was not for that. Why? Imishim Nisyoni, because if you're worried about the problem that the goy is going to want to try it out right before Shabbos, as we said before, it doesn't matter. It won't be a problem. It won't be a problem because the animal is not going to recognize Shimon's voice. Shimon wasn't its owner all this time. Shimon wasn't the one leading it around with his voice. Therefore, there's no possibility that Shimon is going to tell it to go and it's going to go because of him, that there should be a problem in Mechamer. The Imishim She'elo is Schirus, and you can't say there's any issue.
Strictly recognizes the voice of its owner?
Yes.
And it will not?
It's not necessarily going to recognize some other random person's voice, no. If it's a matter of, that we said before, that it's a problem that you might, from sell it, if you're allowed to sell it to him, you might equally come to rent it to lend it to him or to rent it to him. can't give him the loyalty day. It's not the sapser because he didn't give it. It's not the sapser didn't buy it outright. You gave it to him to sell on commission or whatever. So it's not his to be able to do that. Loy Moshe or Loy Moigo. He can't. He doesn't have the authority to lend it to rent it out or to lend it out or to rent it out. So therefore, there's no problem. But Oid, and besides that, he doesn't want to do that anyway. Mishum Nigli Bay Momo. He doesn't want that. He wants to sell it. He wants to sell it off and get rid of it and earn his commission. So he doesn't want that that somebody is going to find out there's a mum in it. If he lends it out or rents it out, there's more of a chance that somebody will find that there's a mum in it, and therefore he'll never be able to sell it. So therefore, he'd rather just dispose of it as fast as possible. Okay, Tosfos asks the question. So what if we see it, and we see that the goy ends up having it? How is everybody going to know that it was sold through the middleman Shimon? Maybe it was sold directly by Reuven. But Tosfos gives two answers. One is when you sell through a middleman, usually people hear about it. Another thing is because it would be a gzeira on top of a gzeira.
What difference would it make if you use it?
That's the problem. On the face of it, the same way as the Gemara is going to discuss later, why the Tanakhama of our Mishnah says you're not allowed to sell them, let's say, an animal with a broken leg. The reason is because people are going to think you sold it to him when it still had an intact leg and then it got broken later by him, and people are going to think you were over on the Easter. So why don't we say the same thing over here? People are going to see that eventually the guy, Tony, has the animal. They know it originally belonged to Reuven. They're not going to know you sold it through Shimon. They're going to think Reuven himself sold it, which is awesome. So again, one answer is when you sell it through Shimon, people hear about it. And the other answer is because, maybe they wouldn't, but it would be a gzeira on top of a gzeira to ask such a thing. It's already a gzeira for the person himself to do it, so therefore you can't make a gzeira on top of that and ask it through a middleman. Another example, Rav Huna Zabin Ahipara La'ovit Kachavim. Rav Huna sold a certain cow to a goy. Omelet of Chista, my time of Oven Marachi. So Rav Chista asked him, why'd you do that? Because we can say it's very possible that he bought it in order to shecht it. What does our Mishnah say that you're not allowed to sell them is talking about is either an animal that they're not going to eat. Again, Rashi uses the expression behemoth meya. Doesn't necessarily mean like a chazir, for example. They'd have no problem with eating that. It means, in other words, something that they wouldn't normally eat, like a donkey or something. Or a horse, or whatever, or even kosher animals, but where the goy specifically said, "I plan to use it for work." Over here, Rav Huna said, "We can assume that he bought it in order to shecht it." Now, Rav Hai Goyim says it's actually not so simple. Rav Hai Goyim says that actually, in this case, what we're talking about is just the opposite. Why was Rav Huna allowed to sell it? Because he knew this guy is buying it in order to shecht. When he says emur, it doesn't just mean we could say; it means we have a strong reason. Because, for example, this particular guy was a butcher. So therefore, there's a strong reason to believe that he's buying it as part of his business, to shecht it and then sell it. So not necessarily in the general case where there's reason to be concerned that he may do work with it. So here's where Tosfos gets into the whole discussion over here that I started mentioning before about really under what circumstances are and aren't you allowed to sell large animals to goyim. I mean, on the face of it, from our Mishnah and our Gemara, it seems it's a pretty blanket statement with certain exceptions. However, again, first of all, you have which kind of animals does it apply to, the kinds that are commonly used for work. Second of all, you have, again, there's the question that Rashi mentioned about behemoth tohura versus behemoth tmeya, ones that are edible versus ones that are inedible.
And we said?
So we said, that's what Rashi had mentioned, the Rashi's understanding of Rav Huna was that when it's an inedible animal or an edible one, but the goy says, I plan to do work with it, would it be also? If it's edible and he doesn't say any such thing, then you should be allowed to sell it to him because there's a good chance that he bought it to shecht. Then Tosfos brings up other points also. We said before about the whole problem of Nisyoni, about that you may end up being Mechamer, that you're gonna call to the animal to go and it's gonna start going. Tosfos says nowadays our animals are not so familiar with our voices, because people didn't keep animals for such a long time. I guess they bought and sold them more regularly, I don't know. So therefore there's less of an issue with it. And it's less often that people rent or lend their animals. So those are also reasons for our teretim. Tosfos ends up saying the bottom line is, though, the fact is, again, and this is another one of those dinim, like we talked about before, about doing business with goyim before their chagas. In those days, you had lots of Jews living together. If you had an animal you didn't need, okay, you sell it to another yid. Now, as we live scattered among the goyim, and if you have an animal you don't need, what are you supposed to do with it? So therefore, the minhag developed to be matir.
In any case?
Pretty much in any case. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings these dinim. It says that the velt is noyeg to be makel on the base, and then the shach spelled out on the basis of these various considerations that Tosfos says. However, the shach says that Baal Nefesh should still be careful about it. Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Again, we're not talking about a matter of a dezara. Again, these dinim are a matter of, again, the dinim that we're dealing with, again, we started in the Gemara that it might be a problem with Ruvia, which in that case depends whether the local goyim are prone to do that kind of thing. Then we said it's a matter of if they'll do malacha with it on Shabbos. So Muslims do malacha with animals on Shabbos, so therefore that doesn't make a difference. So in other words, either this is in category 2 or in category 3. It's definitely not in category 1. It's got nothing to do with our desire. It's either category 2 immoral, or most of the discussion that we've been saying, especially once we establish that once they buy an animal, they're not going to be reveyed because they don't want to ruin it, then basically it's in category 3. It applies across the board to go in. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, we're not tamer damin and kihai davna. Fine. Where do you, Rav Huna, get this distinction that you can say that where he's buying it, And you have reason to think that he's going to eat it, that he's going to shecht it and eat it, that sort of thing is allowed. We get that as follows. It's now, we learn in a Mishnah in Shvi'is about the dinim of Shemitah. Vishama omim lo yimka odam pora achereshes b'shvi'is. Vishama says you're not allowed to sell to a yid. Here we're talking about selling to a yid, but the problem is this yid is suspect of working during Shemitah, which is awesome. So you're not allowed to sell him, Beit Shammai says. You're not allowed to sell him a cow that is good for that's good for plowing, that's been trained to plow. Because again, you have a problem with this neighbor, because you're selling it to a yid who's now going to be able to do it to use it to do malachas that are also doing shmita. Or Beit Hillel Matirin Meshi Yachal L'Shechta, whereas Beit Hillel says it's mutter because he can shecht it. So by the same logic,
therefore, you can say it's one shechting. If he says he won't, that would be different. But by the same logic, in other words, the Rav Huna can be saying, therefore, by the same logic, when I'm selling this animal to the guy, yes, there's a possibility he might use it for malacha, but there's equal likelihood that he might shecht it, and therefore, just like the civil says, it's mutter during shmita, so here, it should be mutter to sell it to the guy. Again, according to the high goyin and according to the way it's brought in halacha, specifically if we have strong reason to think that the guy is buying it to eat, for example, if he's a butcher by trade. But still, this is the same basic idea. In other words,
there is that difference.
Okay. However, Rava says, how can you compare
them to Shvitas? Hosam ain't Shvitas. The difference is, fine, there's no you have no mitzvah that your animal should rest during Shemitah. So there's no real issue of that if you're allowed to sell it to him, you may come to rent it to him or what have you. The only problem is Lifnei Iver. Fine, then you have reason to argue it's not Lifnei Iver because he's not necessarily going to be using it for a forbidden purpose. He might shecht it. Aval Hocha, not Aval. Hocha, Adam et Soval Shvitas behem to b'Shabbat. But here, after all, never mind. The fact is you have a mitzvah that you're not allowed to have your animal work on Shabbos. So therefore, you have the issue of She'ela. You have the issue of Tzchirus. You have the issue of Nisyoni. So never mind Lifnei Iver, fine. It's just the opposite. There's no issue of Lifnei Iver because the goy is allowed to do malacha with the animal, but you have the problem of Shvitas Behemtoi. So it's exactly the opposite situation. So why should it be mutter? Omalei Abaye says to Rabba, v'chol heicha d'odem etzuva asur. Are you telling me, therefore, your premise is for your question that anytime you have a mitzvah to make sure that, for example, that your animal is not allowed to work, then you're also to sell it in a situation where that could conceivably lead to it working on. Well, yeah, that's Rava's premise. But I question your premise because Vare Soda, consider the field. The Adam Mitzvah Shvitas Sadeo B'Shvitas. You surely it is true that you have a din that your field is not allowed to work during Shmita. Your field has to rest during Shmita. Utnan, and yet we learn another such machloikas also in Masechta Shvitas. Same perek two Mishnayos earlier. Veshama Amim Loyimka Adam Sadei Nir B'Shvitas. Veshama says that you're not allowed to sell a plowed field again to a yid who is suspect of working during Shmita. You're not allowed to sell him a field that's already plowed because the likelihood is that you're going to plant in it, which is also yeah. Again, Beit Hillel says it's mutter because, after all, he doesn't have to work it that year. He could just leave it uncultivated and not plant it that year. So therefore, by the same law, so even though you have a mitzvah to make sure that your field doesn't work during Shmita, nevertheless, you're allowed to sell him the plowed field. No, again, if he says I'm going to be planting it, obviously not. We're talking about if he doesn't say. even though he's choshed on Shvi, nevertheless, Vasil says you're allowed to sell it to him because it's a 50-50 chance. He might work it, he might not. So therefore, Rabba, your premise is not necessarily correct. You're arguing there's a difference between whether you're responsible to make sure this animal works on Shabbos or doesn't, but you are responsible to make sure this field doesn't work during Shemitah, and yet we see Basil allows you to sell it. When it comes to Shvius, let's say for example you were to lend your cow to a goy to do work with it on Shvius, the issue is not on the animal. So by the same logic, therefore, you should be allowed to sell it to a Yisrael because there's a chance that he's going to shech.
The issue is not on the animal.
The issue is on the field. And the field belongs to a goy, and he's doing work in it. That's not an issue. When it comes to Shabbos, the issur is on the animal itself, and you are committing an issur if the goy uses it for malacha. So Rabba is arguing, how can you say then that you can use the excuse that he might shecht it? And then we answer that, after all, the fact of the matter is that you have the same issur when it comes to fields, whether it's in your hands or the other Yisrael hands, and nevertheless we say you're allowed to. So therefore we can see it should be allowed when it comes to the cow, even though there's a possibility of Chilul Shabbos as well. Even though the issur applies to the cow, nevertheless, yeah. Okay. Maskeh for Rav Ashi, and similar, on the other hand, Rav Ashi asks, v'cholei chad einod mitzvah shari. So are you telling me then, Abaya, that anytime you don't have a mitzvah involved, then you are allowed to rent things out or lend things out or sell them? Just the opposite tack. Barei kelim, consider the matter of utensils, farming implements, for example. Now, you have no mitzvah to make sure that your farm implements are not used during Shemitah, your farming tools. Utsinan, and yet we learn in yet another Mishnah in that parak. These are the kinds of farming utensils that a person is not allowed to sell during Shvius. Again, to somebody who is choshed al Shvius, somebody who is suspect that will use them illegally during Shemitah. That a person is not allowed to sell them on Shemitah to a choshed. And what are they? Hamachreisha v'choteleo, a plow and all of the other side things that go along with it. And by the way, Rashi points out, you can't even argue that maybe the guy is buying them in advance because he wants them for next year, for the year after Shemitah, because a plow you can find to buy any time. You look in any farming catalog, you always have them for sale, so therefore you can't say that he's buying it now to be prepared. So, oil, the yolk of the animal, the hamizra, and a pitchfork that you use for winnowing the grain. You throw it up into the air and the chaff, the straw, whatever blows away. A decker and a spade. Tosfos discusses that maybe a mizra and a decker are two different things. Now, mizra, Tosfos says, is something else that has to do with a plow. A decker is a sharper kind of tool that you stick in the ground. Not necessarily a square one, but it seems that Tosfos says that it's also something having to do with a plow, like the blade of a plow. Whatever.
A spade is a spade.
This is something else, right? So Tosfos says over here that a decker is also part of the plow. Anyway, the point is that none of those things is a farmer is not allowed to use these things during Shemitah, but there's no mitzvah that your plow is not allowed to be used during Shemitah, and yet we see you also to sell them. So therefore, by the same logic, yes, even though you could argue, even though you don't have a mitzvah to make sure that you're so just the opposite. Why are we saying then that you're allowed to sell them? That you're allowed to sell an animal to Yisrael who's chosher during Shemitah because he might shecht it? If on the other hand you're not allowed to sell him the plow and whatever, even though he's not necessarily going
to
use them during
you're
Shemitah.
You're not allowed to sell him the plow because
we assume he's going to use it during Shemitah. So therefore, it's not a question. So therefore, Rav Ashi is saying that we can't really accept either Rava's or Abaya's premise, that it's a question of whether you're mitzvah or not. Because we see, on the one hand, you are mitzvah on fields, but you're allowed to sell them. You're not mitzvah on an animal, and you're allowed to sell it. On the other hand, you're also not mitzvah on kelim, but you're not allowed to sell those. So it's not. So that can't be the issue.
Elo, Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, never mind the question whether you're mitzvah or not. Kohecha
de'icha l'mitla talinan. In any case where we have reason to assume that there was a different purpose, for example, you're an animal. The mitla, you have something to hang it on. You have, in other words, something that you have a basis for thinking that he's not necessarily buying it for a dvar issue. For example, therefore, a field, he's not necessarily going to work it during Shemitah. A field, unlike plows, for example, a plow anytime you could go and buy one. Fields, there's only a finite amount of land available. Fields aren't always available. So a person might be in a field becomes available to buy during Shemitah, he'll jump at the opportunity. Not necessarily because he's going to plant it during Shemitah illegally, but just because if he waits till after Shemitah, it'll be gone. As opposed to a plow, we can't say that. So when we have reason to be toila, so for an animal, for example, because he intends to shecht it, or field because he doesn't want to miss the opportunity, then talinan.
Then we can make that assumption and say it's allowed to sell it to him, the apagab the mitzvah. Even if we're talking something like a field, but you have a mitzvah to make sure that it doesn't get worse during the mitzvah, nevertheless, you'd still be allowed to sell it to him because there's a reasonable
chance that he's buying it in preparation for next year because he doesn't want to miss the opportunity.
During Shemitah.
But in a case where you don't have any other reasonable assumption to say why he's buying it, for example, why is he buying a plow during Shemitah when he could just as well buy it after Shemitah? There's more of a reason to believe that he's buying it in order to use it illegally during Shemitah. Loitalinim, so therefore we can't make any such assumptions. Afagabda ain't a mitzvah, even though it's true, you don't have a mitzvah to make sure your plow is not used. But nevertheless, you can't be Messiah, you can't help out a yid doing a bit. So not a question of mitzvah or not, it's a question of what's the likelihood? Is it pretty much 100% guaranteed that he's buying it to do a malacha with, to do something that's also, or is there a possibility that there is another possibility? Which therefore that explains therefore. So again, that explains Rav Huna being able to sell the animal to the guy, because not necessarily is he buying it to work with it. There's an equal chance that he's buying it to eat it.
So we're using the seal and the kelim to explain the
animal, yeah. So well, we have three cases with Shemitah. One with a field, one with an animal, one with kelim,
right,
where we say the first two are most of the last one is osur, and we're applying from that to the case of selling an animal to a guy, where again, that's similar to the field of the animal during Shemitah. In that, just like with a field or an animal during Shemitah, there's a good possibility that he's using it for another purpose, not for something which is osur. In the case of the animal to shecht it, in the case of the field to wait with it after Shemitah, the same way with selling the animal to the guy, he might end up doing malacha with it on Shabbos, which would be a problem, as we said before, but he might, on the other hand, eat it, which is fine. So therefore, you're allowed.
You're saying that you can't sell a goy animal. That once the animal is, the ownership of the animal goes to the goy, so why?
Yes, we discussed that in the Gemara before you got here, which is basically the Chachamim made a gzera, because if you're allowed to sell it to him, you may come to rent it to him, you may come to lend it to him, where it's still considered your animal, or he might buy it right before Shabbos, and you're going to tell the animal to go, and it's going to go based on your commands, and that would be an issur on Shabbos. So because of all those issues, the Chachamim asked you to sell work animals to goyim.
If you sell it, you will be likely to...
To rent it or to lend it.
To rent it or to lease it from him?
Well, no. If you're allowed to sell such animals, you're allowed to sell horses, for example,
right,
or donkeys or whatever, to goyim, then you may equally some other time come to rent them one or to lend them one. That's what we say. Okay. Fine.
Now, for the case of the field, why don't we say that this applies only maybe a year or 2 years before Shemitah?
We're talking about during Shemitah. We're talking about during Shemitah itself. If he buys it a year or two before Shemitah, of course you're allowed to sell it to him.
Okay.
He's perfectly allowed to work a field a year or two before Shemitah. Okay. Onward. Now, Rabba went and sold a donkey to a yid who was suspect that he's going to turn around and sell the animal to a goy. Omale Abai, my time over to Marhochi. So Abai asked him, how could you do that? Omale, so Rabba says, what's the problem? And all the Israelites, when he sold it to a yid. Omale, so Abai says, but he's going to turn around and sell it to a guy. So Rava answers him back. So what's the problem? Why are you assuming necessarily he's going to sell it to a guy when he could just as well sell it to a yid? Again, it should be the same logic as before. There is something he could do with it, which is osur. There's something else he could do with it, which is mutter. Why should we assume he's going to do the one that's osur? Yeah.
Choices, by the way, huh?
Didn't Rabba himself argue with that premise before, that when we say there's two parts? Yeah.
Okay, that's a good question.
Yeah, so Tosfos says, okay, but once he heard the answer that we said in the Gemara before, then he accepted it. Also, Tosfos gives two other answers also, which is there's less reason when a person is buying an animal that's capable of work, there's much less reason to think that he's going to shecht it and eat it. As opposed to over here, it's literally a 50-50 chance that he might do one or the other. Tosfos also mentioned before the Girsa, there was a Girsa, not Rabba before, but Rava, and in that case, and of course, two different Amaroi. Okay. Anyway. Fine. So he argues, after all, that he could just as easily sell it to a Yid, which would be Mutter, as to a Goy, which is also, so what's the problem? Eispe, however, then Abaya asks on him, what about, the Braisa says, Mokum Shinagu Limka Behema Dakala Kusim Mokrin. You have in many places in the Gemara where it uses the word kusim, and it was actually changed by the censors. It's really supposed to be goyim or whatever. You hear it literally means kusim. So, in a place where the minhag was to sell small animals to kusim, and we know the kusim are those quasi Jews, the ones who were brought to Eretz Yisrael after Sancheirov took the Aseret HaShavatim into Golos, and they took on some mitzvahs for a while. They worshipped the Avodah Zarah, and there was the whole machlokes whether they're Jews or not. Later on, eventually, it was discovered they're worshipping Avodah Zarah, and they were completely rejected. But during the time of the Second Base of Mikdash, and for a little while afterwards, they were like, Suffolk Jews, after about 100 years after the Churban, in the times of Rameyer. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the Braisa says, Mokum Shinagu Limka Behema Dakala Kusim Mokun, in places where the minhag is that you're allowed to sell small animals, sheep and goats, to Kusim, then you're allowed to. Shaloi Limka Ein Mokun, in places where the minhag is not to sell it to them, then you're not allowed to sell.
And that's how they were considered Kusim.
In this time, they're still considered sort of like halfway between Jews and goats. So wait. The question is, my time, why were there places where you're not allowed to sell them small animals? Ilema mishum de chashudi arabiya. Are you telling me the problem is that the kusim are suspect of bestiality? The question with that is, mi chashidi? Are goyim maybe suspect of it? Are kusim suspect of such a thing? V'hatanya, but we learn in a braisa. Ein ma midin behema pundakoris shal ev de kachavim. You're not allowed to stable an animal, as we said before, you're not allowed to stable an animal in a goy's inn. A goy meaning here a full-fledged goy, not a kusi. Zcharim etzel zcharim. You're not even allowed to put male animals together with male human beings because they made you revi on them. Or nekevis etzel nekevis. You're not allowed to put female animals together with a goita for reasons that we'll discuss in the next parak because the goy may come to be mezana with her and end up being revea the animal. The ein sarach lem and nekevis etzel zcharim and zcharim etzel nekevis. Needless to say, you're not allowed to stable a female animal with male goyim or a male animal with female goyim. The ein moitrin, because again, there's the problem of revia. The ein moitrin behem l'roya shalahen. You're also not allowed to give an animal to a goyish shepherd to watch for you. Same problem.
Revia.
The ein miyachdin imahim. You're not allowed to be in yichud misyachdin, really, actually, imahim. You're not allowed to be in yichud, to be one-on-one, alone with a goy. There we'll learn the problem in the next paragraph. The problem is the goy might be a murderer, and then that's it. You're going to be in danger. The ein moitrin lahem tinik l'lamde sefer l'lamde umnus. You're also not allowed to give over a Jewish kid to learn by their books, like to learn English or whatever, or to learn a trade. Same. So Rashi says there's two problems. Number one, the possibility of mishkav zacher, which goyim are also in, and number two, the fact that they may teach him their goyish ways of minis.
That's okay.
Abel, but continues the Braisa, and here is the key point, which is why we're bringing it in.
Why not to kill them?
Why not to? Oh, that he might kill the kid.
Yeah.
That might be also. I think that might be another issue as well. Okay, maybe the vote is. I mean,
didn't want to repeat itself.
Could be, but it could also be. I mean, we'll learn more about these dinim in the next parak. So we may discuss over there why it is with kids there might be less of a problem with shvichel domim. But whatever it is, the point is. Yeah. Okay. Aval, but, and here's the key point, ma min behema pundakoris shal kusim it's chorim eitzel mekevus, when the kevus says it's chorim, you are allowed to stable an animal by a kusi in, even if it's a male animal with a female innkeeper, or female animal with a male innkeeper. The in sarachlam is chorim eitzel chorim and the kevus says on the kevus. Needless to say, a male animal with a male innkeeper and a female animal with a female innkeeper, because the goyim we said before are suspect on revia. Kusim are not. In general, the Gemara discusses in a number of places that, in general, things that it says clearly in Torah Shebichtav, the Kosim were careful about. In fact, to some extent, they were even more careful about them than regular Jews. Since it says explicitly in the Pasuk that relations with animals are also, therefore, they're not suspect about that. You're allowed to give an animal to a Kosi, to a Kosi shepherd to watch. You're allowed to be alone with a Kosi. We don't suspect them of murder. And we are allowed to give a kid to them to learn by them one on one to teach them how to read or to teach them a trade. Alma loy chashidi. So we see from this that kusim are not suspect on Rabia. Yet we started saying before that there are places where the minhag was not to sell behema daka to kusim.
Why?
That's the question. But oid tanya. And furthermore, we also learn another brisa. We're not allowed to sell, here we're talking about goyim, regular full-fledged goyim. You're not allowed to sell them, right, not kusim. You're not allowed to sell them.
Kusim you are?
Well, hold on. You're not allowed to sell them weapons. Zion means weapons, like clay zion, or utensils for weapons. So it actually says weapons means, for example, a sword. Clay zion would be, for example, sheaths, to put a holder to put the sword inside you. The ain mashchizim
and it's not really a clay zion.
No, the clay zion. That's what we're saying. Zion means the weapons themselves. Clay zion means things that are used together with the weapons. The ain mashchizim lands of zion. You're not allowed to sharpen their weapons. Now we'll see exceptions to that later, but right now let's deal with the basic halacha. The ain merchan lehem lo sadon. You're not allowed to sell them a block. A block that's used to chain up a person's feet inside it, like a prisoner, like they put them in the stocks and then chain up their feet into a big metal block or whatever. You're not allowed to sell them that. It's called a sadon, yeah. Veloy kolorin. You're not allowed to sell them metal collars that they put around the neck of a condemned criminal. Veloy kvalim or chains. Veloy shaloyes shal barzel or kvalim actually means ropes, more like the leshal shalois shal barzel, and not iron chains. Echad ov kechavim the echad kusi. Now all of that applies both to a full fledged goy and to a kusi. Now my timer. Now we have to figure out. So why would you not be allowed to sell a kusi, these kinds of weapons? A goy we can understand. You're a full fledged goy because they're choshed on shvichas damim, and therefore they may end up using them for bloodshed, or at least for trials or for capital cases where halacha doesn't say that they ought to be condemning somebody to death.
Considered by the avodah zara.
Well, eventually they were found to be by the avodah zara. During the time we're talking about, we don't know. We weren't sure. There was a machlokas throughout Shas, whether they're geire emes or whether they're geire arayas. Are they sincere geirim, or are they only became geirim because of the fear of the lions that are attacking them, and they weren't really Jews? Anyway, the point is that they're not suspect. Are you going to say that kusim are suspect on shvichas damim, and that is why you're not allowed to sell them weapons? Can't. We just said, they're not choshered. We said before, you're allowed to be alone together with a kusi. Ella, the reason must be, why are you not allowed to sell them weapons, and why in some places was the minhag not to sell them small animals? Mishum de osilo zabonil oed kechavim. Obviously, the problem is because the kusi may turn around and sell it to a guy. So now Abaye is arguing on Rabba, you went and sold this animal to a yid who was koshered on selling it to a goyim, and you're arguing that he might sell it to a yid, he might sell it to a goy, therefore there's no problem. But we see from this whole thing that with a kusi, that when there's a chance with a kusi that he's going to sell it to a goy, then it's awesome. The chitema, so you might argue, kusi like ovid shuva yisrael ovid shuva. So you might answer, okay, a kusi, if he does such a thing, is not going to do shuva. He's not going to care about the fact that the chachamim said it's also, because the kusim don't care about what the chachamim say. Yisrael ovid shuva. You could argue a yid maybe is after all going to do shuva. After all, he may decide at some point to do shuva and not end up selling it to the guy. So you could argue there's a difference.
However, the Amar of Nachman, Amar Nam Rabua, but we see that Nachman says in the name of Rabba, Rabua.
No, Kederach Sha'amru also linked to every Chachamim. Just as the Chachamim said, you're not allowed to sell such things to a guy, a full-fledged guy. Kach also limka the Yisrael Achashel limka la'erik Achavim. So also you're not allowed to sell it to a guy who is suspect on selling it to a guy. So therefore, so in other words, that's the bottom line. You're arguing that there's an equal chance he could sell it to a yid or a guy, but here we see that not. Here we see that you're not allowed to sell it to a yid who is suspect of selling it to a guy. So you shouldn't have done that.
Okay, so Rava realized he was wrong. He drove his back to his fourth party. He ran after him three times.
You're not allowed to sell these things to a... That's what we're talking about. This yid was kosher. It wasn't Sam a yid. It was this guy, Rava, told him he was kosher. Yeah.
So a goy is not necessarily kosher.
A goy himself, you're not allowed to sell it to for the reasons we said before, right. because he's going to do malacha with it on Shabbat.
Yes.
But you're not allowed to sell it to a yid who's going to sell it to a goy. Who's choshev to sell it to a guy, and yet Rabbi went and did just that. So he realized that he was wrong. Rohit Basra Tlosa Parsi. He ran after the buyer three parsa to try and get it back from him. The Ikadami Parsa Bakala. Another version is that it was only one parsa, but it was in sand where it's much harder to run. Valoy Adrache, but he couldn't catch up with him. So that's it, therefore. So it was a done deal. He lost the opportunity.
So that's our law. In fact, you know, I want to sell it to the Torah Yisrael who's kosher. Now, the Torah just points out a couple of things. First of all,
didn't we say in a previous Gemara that lifnei to lifnei is not also. You're not allowed to lifnei either. You're not allowed to do something that can make it that another person is going to do an Aveira, but you're allowed to sell it to one person who may sell it to another who is going to end up doing an Aveira. Isn't this a case of lifnei to lifnei? Because you're selling it to Yisrael who's going to turn around and sell it to a guy. The Tosfos makes an interesting distinction over here. There we were talking about selling it to Goy A, who's then going to sell it to Goy B.
Right.
Fine. There's no issur of lifnei to lifnei. But when it comes to when the first person you're selling it to is Yisrael, he himself has an issur to sell it to the Goy. It's not lifnei to lifnei, therefore. You're directly making it that the Yisrael is going to be able to be over on an Aver. And therefore, that's a problem. If you were selling it to one yid who's going to sell it to another yid who's going to sell it to a guy, fine, that wouldn't be an issue. That's lifnei to lifnei. But like this, when you sell it to the Yisrael who's choshered, and he himself is going to be over, there's a likelihood that he's going to be over on the takana of the chachamim and sell it to the guy, then you made it possible for that yid to do an issur. You did a problem of lifnei. It's not lifnei to lifnei. So therefore, that's an issue. And then Tosfos points out one more thing, which is, so before we said, after all, we said that when it comes to selling an animal to a goy, when it's something edible, there's a likelihood that he may eat it, therefore it's mutter. Why over here are we concerned all of a sudden? And the answer is because it's equally likely that he'll sell it to a yid as to a goy. There you could argue it's a preponderance one way or the other. There's more of a likelihood he might end up eating it or whatever. Here it's exactly a 50-50 thing. He's a choshered. He doesn't care about selling it to a yid versus to goy. Therefore, you have an issue. And that is why, in the end, Rabba ran after Rabba accepted what Abaya said. He ran after the guy, but he couldn't catch up to him. It was too late already.
Okay.
Fine. We'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, with the discussion about weapons and what then, and then more discussion of
weapons.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. And then we'll also deal with more things about the animals of Amish. Okay. Thank you.